Welcome to today's hangout with Fire Engineering. We have Bobby Halton with us. PJ Norwood is at a very interesting conference that he's going to fill us in with. And we have Chief Steve Pegram. Chief Pegram is somebody who I consider has command presence. He's competent, calm, and confident. He's somebody that he's one of those guys that when you ask him to do something, he always tends to follow through, and he's always there when you need him. Steve is the township administrator in Goshen, Ohio. Prior to being appointed the administrator, he had a 32-year career in the fire service. He was the fire chief of Goshen, Ohio, which he held that position for 13 years. He was the past president of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, and he was a past FDIC instructor. Hopefully we'll see him back, and FDIC advisory board member. Steve just went through recently having a tornado in his jurisdiction. And I know that Bobby always likes to defer to ancient wisdom because that's the wisdom that stands the test of time. However, in a situation like this, we have to go to the wisdom of a modern philosopher, Mike Tyson, who said, everybody has a plan until they're punched in the face. And when talking to Steve, they had plans laid out. They had contingencies all set up. And when this tornado came, nobody told the tornado about their plan. And some of the things that happened where they had to move and be nimble, things we just don't think about, like a generator not working because of the storm. So we thought it was important to have Steve come on, especially while our brothers and sisters are bracing for a hurricane in Florida. So our thoughts are with them, but it seems that these weather events are coming up more and more. And Steve, welcome to the show and tell us what happened.
Sure. Thanks, Frank. I appreciate being on. I got to host one of these for a while, and so it's a different experience being the guest, and I appreciate all of you having me. So July 6th of this year, the weather was a little cloudy. We were expecting a lot of thunderstorms and some rain, but about 2:30 in the afternoon, I was in my office here at Goshen Township, and my weather alert on my phone went off, and it said, Tornado Goshen. And, you know, the really loud one sounds like an Amber Alert, you know, Tornado Goshen is all it said. And as I turned behind me and looked out the window, I'm on the second floor of this building, there were debris flying past the window. And I immediately then started hearing the roof lift. And I heard a couple of people in the building yelling. And I realized that the tornado was already here. This wasn't an early warning. It was here. So I ran with my staff down the stairs, and literally as we were going down the stairs in the township administration building, which is also our tornado shelter and also our police station, the windows on the building were blowing out and the ceiling tiles were falling out of the ceiling. And we got downstairs, did a quick PAR check on our people and made sure we had everybody that we knew were in the building. And you know, as you hear so often, as quickly as it came, it was gone. So it seemed like 90 seconds to me, may have been longer, but I started to go up the stairs, back upstairs to do an assessment, see what had happened. And I was met by our fire captain, which is our shift commander. He was soaking wet and had a bunch of firemen behind him, and they kind of looked dazed and confused. And the first thing he told me was the firehouse collapsed. And our fire station 18, which is our headquarters station, built in 1982, is right next door. And the firemen basically had ran over to the township building, knowing that that was our tornado shelter where I worked and the police chief worked. So again, did a quick PAR check on them, made sure we had everybody. I walked outside and it was eerie quiet, as often as you hear these storms. And the devastation was just unimaginable. Every car in the parking lot was gone or flipped over or pushed somewhere else. There was, every tree was down, Every power pole was down. Every transformer was down. All the signs were down. There was debris littering everywhere that you looked. And I turned and looked to the fire station, and the east side of our fire station was collapsed with bricks laying in the parking lot. That building was built originally as a separate fire station, EMS station. The two organizations merged 25 years ago. So the EMS station is basically what collapsed, but it was truly one building with a firewall separating them. And the firewall is probably what saved the firefighters. So they were lucky enough to be on the fire side or the west side of the building when it hit. They went into the bathroom. Building does not have a basement, does not have a storm shelter or anything like that, but the safest place is probably the bathroom, shower area, and that's where they rode out the storm. One firefighter was actually in the bathroom on the EMS side, which is the side that collapsed, and he was able to go out the back door and find safety.
That is remarkable. Yeah. So the fire station was the epicenter of right in the path of the tornado.
Yeah, so the National Weather Service, after they confirmed it was a tornado, stated in the news the next day that the highest recorded wind was as the tornado struck the fire station.
Whoa.
That was an exact quote from the National Weather Service.
Now, this is an interesting question that some of our listeners and viewers would probably definitely have. And PJ's experience in this, going from an operational role to administrative role, you were the fire chief for 13 years, you know, you bled and sweat the fire service your whole life. And now you're there as an administrator. What was that like, that transition like?
I was immediately thinking like a fire chief, and probably for the first hour forgot that I wasn't the fire chief, to be honest with you. So, you know, one caveat, of course, the power and everything was knocked out. You know, every power pole within 2 mile radius was knocked down. But what also makes this incident unique is our generator. Our building has an emergency backup generator. And as I said, we have a tornado shelter in our building and all these different systems and continuity of operations, things that we have. But the storm hit the generator and destroyed it. So we didn't have power because the power was gone, and we didn't have backup power because the generator was gone. So we were truly in the dark. So I ran and got a flip chart and a bunch of magic markers, and we started writing and documenting. 911 calls immediately started coming in. We set up an area command in my office just because it's one of the larger rooms. It's a former conference room and has a big table. And the police chief was there, the fire chief, the shift captain, the sergeant on duty from the PD. But the other thing that's unique about where we're located is, you know, we couldn't, you know, typically we're the first responders. And I often said in this event, we were the second responders because we couldn't get off our campus. So we were getting calls and we knew we had to get out and start doing a windshield survey and addressing 911 calls, but we couldn't get out of the parking lot. Every entrance, every exit was blocked with trees, wires, telephone poles, pieces of houses, debris, and everything else. So probably the first hour was just organizing resources and calling resources, setting up a staging area and calling for help. And, you know, all of us probably rely on mutual aid a lot. I actually just was at a conference this morning of EMA directors, and there were four different speakers talking on four different events, and every one of them highlighted the importance of mutual aid. So we called for kind of, you know, usually we call alarm assignments and that sort of thing. But what we did is we just called the county and the county next to us. We're right on a border, and just said, we need 10 engines and 5 medic units, and we don't care where they come from. You know, we're not going to sit there and say, send this department, send that department. Don't, you know, you figure it out. Don't strip the area. And send them to this intersection, and we'll set up a staging area there.
Bobby wants to say,
yeah. So, Steve, coming from Oklahoma, where I live now, those folks are really kind of wired into these kind of tornado events. Ohio, not so much, I would assume, much less frequently. So, in your community, you have a tornado shelter, but how prevalent would that be, say, on your residential side? And then, if you wouldn't mind letting us know, how long was that thing on the ground for, and what was the, you know, what was the, you know, path of that thing? Did it go through a residential commercial area? What was the kind of the magnitude of it?
Yeah, so it's an F2. It was 1 mile per hour short of being an F3. So we just missed it. But it was the most powerful tornado in the Cincinnati, Ohio region in 20 years. So it's not uncommon for us to have a couple tornado watches or warnings in the region every year, especially in the summer and late spring. This is my third tornado that I've experienced since I've lived in Ohio. And some people have now pointed out to me that every place I've worked has had a tornado. And so maybe it's me. I hope not.
He's got ruby flippers in the closet.
Part of our, you know, we do have tornado sirens. You know, we're an area that, you know, does deal with it, not like the mid plains and places like that. You know, it's not Kansas or Oklahoma, but it is something that, you know, everybody's cognizant of. Most towns have a shelter. Our schools and all of our government buildings that are built today have to have shelters built in them, because we are kind of in that tornado part of the world. We have, you know, sirens and things like that. But what, you know, this spun up so quickly, and the National Weather Service and the news media even said by the time the alert went out, it was already on the ground and hitting our buildings. So literally by the time I got the alert, which is the same alert 911 gets, and then they have to manually activate the sirens, it had already hit the building and passed us. So the tornado siren for that's closest to us is on the firehouse. So that's another problem, because the firehouse got hit and the siren's on the roof. So that wasn't going to work anyway. But we really didn't have, if you didn't have an app on your phone or a weather alert radio at home, you didn't get an advance warning. A lot of the warning came after and south of us. So it kicked up about maybe a quarter mile, not even a quarter mile across the street from the firehouse. It struck a couple of commercial businesses, a house, and then came across State Route 28 is where the fire station is. It came across State Route 28 and did a direct hit on the front of the apparatus bays of the fire station. And then it kind of jumped over the building we're in. So there's a bunch of dumpsters between the firehouse and the township building, and all those dumpsters went over us. So they we found one in somebody's house. We found two in the woods, and one landed in our public works director's front hood. But a lot of damage to our building was actually determined to be the dumpsters hitting the roof and rolling across the roof and then continuing on southeast. So we're right in the kind of the crossroads of the town. So, you know, the big grocery store, the local bank, the local businesses are all right here in this epicenter. And then, but as soon as you get 1,000-1,500 yards down the street, you're into our school district. So our school district has 4 schools, but all of them are on one campus. So right after we got hit, they got hit. So a huge blessing of the event was July. School wasn't in session. The buildings, for the most part, were empty. There was about 30 kids there doing a summer program, and obviously administrative staff, but all those buildings had damage as well. And then it continued south, southeast into a mostly rural residential area. So a lot of the housing stock that got hit was, you know, 1950s, 1960 vintage, a lot of single story type homes, a lot of split levels, bi levels, that sort of thing. But sparsely populated, which again helped us in how much damage we had. So the damage was severe because there's not a tree left and there's not a telephone pole left. But luckily, because of the part of our town that it hit, it didn't hit a high population area. If it had been a mile to the west, it would have hit the largest mobile home park that we have in our community, and that would have been catastrophic.
I want to get PJ to weigh in on this. It's kind of reminiscent of every tabletop exercise I was ever participated in for hazmat. You always had the one jerk who would say, the chlorine tanker turned over in front of the firehouse and now your firehouse is unusable. And, you know, everybody would harass that individual. But we need people to ask those hard questions, because here you're starting from scratch. PJ?
Yeah, Frank, thanks. I appreciate the conversation. You know, I was able to hear this story firsthand from Steve. We were recently together in Philadelphia. And while, you know, we have very little experience with tornadoes in Connecticut, just the last 4 or 5 years, we've been getting some, I even hate to say they're tornadoes compared to what this and what Bobby experiences in Oklahoma, you know, these very small tornadoes. You know, we're used to the, you know, the blizzards, the ice storms, the hurricanes, the things that we know are coming, where we could take the book, the binder off the shelf, review the plan, update it, and we slowly work our way into that. But in 2011, when Hurricane Irene hit, we knew it was coming. We were prepared. Our plans were great. And our hurricane plans were been in place for years. Well, that storm hit different. And while it wasn't to this magnitude, I was the incident commander of a half mile piece of street along the shoreline, Long Island Sound. We lost 26 homes in that half mile strip. When I mean lost, probably similar to what you experienced, Steve, were gone. When I mean lost, there were some beachfront homes that there were only the pylons left and nothing else. So what I'm interested in is I said I was way over my head as the incident commander. I was shooting from the hip and trying to do the best that I could because we didn't have a plan for that. As I'm sure your plans are amazing and solid, but didn't take into place all the things that you experienced. So I think what our listeners could really benefit from is how did you now manage that, right? How did you manage those pieces? You know, going back to the markers and the flip chart in your office to not just that first 1 hour period, but those 12 hour operational periods. How did you manage that? And what experience are you now want to communicate to the fire service on how to plan for those things that you can't really plan for?
Yeah, I think that's a great segue. So initially I was acting like the incident commander, and then I realized my police chief and fire chief were standing next to me. And so I let them take over. And one of the first resources we called for was our command unit that comes out of Hamilton County, which is the county where Cincinnati, Ohio is. They have one of these large RV command vehicles, but I didn't really need a command vehicle as much as I need something that had electricity and phone and communications capabilities, because we lost everything and we were in the dark. And, a side note that I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm telling everybody and their brother that if all of your emergency backup generators are natural gas, you're going to run into a problem. So natural gas is usually readily available, convenient, cheap, a little bit cleaner, less maintenance. So a lot of places have gone away from diesel. And I've now experienced this in two events where you end up with a lot of gas leaks because of all these buildings that are destroyed. And the first thing the gas company does is shut the grid. And then they try to isolate it, and then they turn it back on. Well, when they shut the grid at about the 45-minute mark of this incident, all the generators at the cell phone towers and our 911 communications tower went down as well. So at about the 45-minute mark, we lost cell phones and radio communications. So we're on a statewide system, so the system kicked in and started giving us some coverage, but we lost good coverage. We started getting the annoying bonk when you get the busy signal on a radio system. So again, I tell people, based upon our incident, imagine having to go back to paper, pencil, and CB radios. And for days, little things that we don't think about. We have iPads for run reports. Well, we didn't have internet. We didn't have our pucks didn't work on our vehicles. We didn't have Wi-Fi. We didn't have any of those resources. So how do you do an EMS report? And a lot of organizations got rid of their paper reports years ago. You know, it got annoying to store those things. We never use them anyway, right? So it's those little things of having the backups, a paper fire report, paper EMS report, pens and paper, all that stuff. But the other thing is, with losing communication, we went back to having to use runners. So I knew that, one of my chief officers, for example, was in our mobile home park checking houses, but I had no way to get a report on damage assessment and see if he needed more help. So I literally would have to take a chief that came to the command post, tell him where I wanted him to go and how to get there. And he would have to go deliver the message and then come back and deliver the message verbally. Because we just, for the first couple hours, we had zero communication capability.
It almost sounds like, remember Apollo 13? It's my favorite scene. where the head of the Space Command takes all the computers and just swipes them off the table,
yep.
goes to the whiteboard, draws the Earth, draws the moon, says, we're here, our guys are here, we want them back here.
Yep.
You know, and so I think that, and it, boiling it down, I think your message right now is that, you know, all our electronic stuff is superb, but be prepared to go back to yellow tablets, pencil and paper, and then make sure that your folks know how to manage like that. And obviously, you know, tornadoes are kind of episodic, which is the good thing about them. In other words, they tend to isolate their damage pretty much, unless you talk about like Oklahoma City or more Oklahoma or the type of Joplin where it took out entire communities. But generally, you know, you can get back up partially pretty quickly. But, you know, if you look at what's going to be going on with Ian today and hurricane damage, you know, you can be without power for a prolonged period of time. And one of the things we do out here is that we tell our residential people to go with propane or gasoline on their generators or diesel. And for just that reason, Steve, that we're, you know, we've seen our gas lines go down as well. The $64,000 question for me too, that I think is important in your system. Can you tell people how it's configured? You guys are, you do some first responder stuff, but you have a EMS component that's kind of a separate agency. Isn't that correct?
No, actually we do full fire and ALS, fire and EMS.
Okay. Oh, that's kind of different.
We transport
for Ohio.
We do it all.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was the weird thing. I'll tell you, the first couple of hours and really the first couple of days is we didn't have a big surge for EMS. I think time of day, 2:30 in the afternoon helped us. A lot of people were at work. Those people that were home were awake and aware and reacted. Schools were not occupied. So, you know, that helped us a lot, and just where it hit a little bit helped us. But we transported two people. We know there were other injuries where people just took care of themselves or drove themselves to the hospital, but no fatalities. And I'll be honest with you, as the administrator and as we sat in the command post on day 2 and 3 and 4, one of my biggest fears was that somebody was going to call us saying, you know, it's been 3 days and I still can't get hold of my grandmother. And we'd go out to the house and find somebody in the house or under a collapse or something like that. So we ended up doing a door-to-door search of every property in the impact zone. 3 times, because I just wanted to make sure that we didn't miss anyone. So very blessed in that area, but we do EMS, but we really didn't have an EMS event with this storm. And I think a lot of it was time of day and time of year. If it had been school day, you would still be reading about us on the news because it hit all 4 school buildings. And normally those would have been packed full of kids at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Did you lose any apparatus, any fire trucks and vehicles and things of that nature?
So we own about 50 vehicles in our fleet, township-wide, public works, police, fire, EMS. 32 of the 50 were damaged. The worst damage was to the zoning inspector car, you know, in a Ford Escape type vehicle, parked right in front of the building and right in the path of the tornado. Police department had a lot of their vehicles parked outside, and they took a lot of damage from debris. So broken out windows, broken out windshields, fire and EMS, the same thing. A lot of the vehicles just got pelted with debris. Everything was still in service for the first few hours, but then we started getting flats. So a lot of the places we were driving, we were not driving on roads. We were driving through yards and over curbs and wherever we had to go to get around the power lines and the trees. And I don't remember how many we ended up with, but we had a ton of flat tires from debris and nails and all the things that were laying everywhere. So we're still working through that. We have some pretty funny looking vehicles driving around Goshen right now that, you know, half of the vehicle's not lettered anymore, or a door that doesn't match, or little things like that, but it's all part of the process. And then in this day and age with supplies and availability of vendors and things like that, you know, it's been a long road to recovery for the township itself as a government, let alone our residents are still struggling with that as well.
Is the township moving to have a contingency now to take their generators off of natural gas, or at least have a backup of propane or diesel or things?
So, yes. So our other fire station, which was not impacted by the storm, luckily was on diesel. And I had actually done that when I was fire chief in 2016, when we built that firehouse. I had been in what we called Dry Ike. So Hurricane Ike, which dumped a lot of water on the south when it hit Ohio, had run out of water, but it still had the wind. So we had some really bad storm damage back then. And again, same situation. We lost all of our generators that were natural gas. So when I came to Goshen and we built a new firehouse, it was diesel. And that helped us because that's where we moved all of our operations for fire and EMS. And we had to double bunk everybody, and people were sleeping in recliners and things like that. And but we had power. So that was the good news. So anything we needed to do, we had to go to that firehouse, because that was the only facility that the township owned that kept power the whole time. On the replacement generator, we're looking at diesel or propane, like Bobby mentioned. I do have a propane generator at my house, and because where I live is a little bit more rural and we're not on the gas grid, so I have propane for heat and my stove, and I put in an emergency generator. So just to show the advantage, my wife and kids never lost power. So the town was out for 5 days, some people a little bit longer, but by the fifth day, most people had power back, but I never lost power at home, and that's because I had a propane generator. So
Steve, how about your staff? You know, this impacted your community, which impacted your staff's homes. I'm sure some of your staff had some damage, if not, you know, severe damage to their homes. Then trying to get them to come into work and leave their family behind, and or the staff that was working that day that could not communicate with their family at home to know if they were okay or not. How did you manage that? And how did you manage the long-term shift schedule over the next week, giving your staff the time off to spend with their family and take care of their home and be there to respond and help the community?
So first and foremost, we're very tight-knit community. We have a lot of our employees live in town. And prior to the tornado, we thought that was a really good thing, because it, you know, family friendly environment and everybody loves where they live and that sort of thing. But to your point, exactly, the problem with that is all of our people were impacted. If it wasn't their house, it was their brothers or their mothers or their sisters or their aunts or their uncles or their best friends. So everybody was impacted in some way. Most people were able to get messages home and communicate via text or something, that was definitely a factor. What was kind of cool, and I think we're used to this in the fire service, but everybody from our fire department, everybody from our police department, everybody from our public works department that was on or off duty showed up. It took some of them a really long time to get there, because traffic became a problem very, very quickly, and all the debris in the roads, but everybody just threw their uniforms on and showed up for work and went to work. And that was great. The problem really we got to a point where we realized they were tired and they really needed to go home, and they didn't want to. They didn't want mutual aid handling their calls, you know, on day two, day three, day four. They wanted to take care of our community and our town. So we actually changed our operations plan at one point, and we started using the mutual aid companies for the storm related items that we had. And we used our companies to handle the 911 calls, because they know the town, they know the frequent flyers, they know the back ways to get everywhere. They know the names of the streets, which there's a funny story there. But I think they really appreciated getting back in service and being able to take care of the town, because it's their town and their family that they're protecting. And we use the mutual aid to take care of the storm type stuff.
Okay, Chief, you can't say there's a funny story and not tell us the funny story. I mean, come on.
So again, you never want to hear about anybody just showing up. But, you know, one of the blessings of this incident is I've got a core group of friends that I've worked with for 25 plus years. A lot of us were firefighters together, and we've all branched off, and several of us are fire chiefs now, and they all showed up. Even though I'm not the fire chief in Goshen anymore, they know the guy that is the fire chief, Ed Myers, fantastic guy that I handpicked to take my spot. And they all showed up, and what do you need us to do? And one of them was assigned as the staging officer. He lives an hour away, so he doesn't know the names of the streets in Goshen. And his feedback to us after a couple hours is like, you really need to put somebody as the staging officer that knows the names of the streets and what direction that is, because I've never heard of Kazadale Road, which some people call Kazadale or Cozydale or Kazadale or Kazidale, or and I'm not even sure I know how to spell it, and I live here. He was having a hard time with how to pronounce things on the radio and knowing where things were. So that was a really good takeaway, but also a funny story, because he came to me. He's like, I need help. He's like, you know, is it, you know, so having somebody familiar with the town is really, really helpful in partnering up, especially with your mutual aid resources. And we got mutual aid from as far as Cincinnati, which I don't think has ever happened. Definitely not out our way. But I have a really cool picture of Engine 19 from Cincinnati that protects the University of Cincinnati campus and our Engine 19 working together.
That is a really great point. And even if you're in a department where you're not going to be facing a tornado and flying monkeys and houses going and cows flying in the air, whenever you have a large scale incident where you have to bring in mass mutual aid, even a firefighter's funeral for that matter, where you have outside departments. One thing we always did in New Haven that worked out really well is if it was a fire department event, we'd bring in an off-duty police officer to ride with each company because they knew the streets, and vice versa. If the police were having an event, the firefighters would go and be kind of the direction and the eyes and the ears of, for the ground, to understand the ground truth of what's going on in the streets and things of that nature. PJ, weigh in.
Yeah, so Frank, we had that similar situation during Hurricane Irene, because we were reaching out to mutual aid, but our mutual aid was also being impacted. So it's actually an enjoyable story. Frank's brother was part of USAR, and he was working that day in Middletown, Connecticut, which is probably about 45 minutes. Now, 45 minutes for mutual aid in Connecticut is unheard of, right? Because we are so small. I know that that's commonplace for some of our listeners today. But we
probably takes Bobby 45 minutes to get his mail down his driveway.
You know, but we had, you know, the Middletown rescue truck show up in the town. You know, Frank Ritchie's brother responded from 45 minutes away, and our police force was hit so significantly. You know, for this half mile piece of property that probably had like, you know, seven or eight different intersecting roads, we needed to secure it. I only had two police officers. We ended up utilizing the state police, but none of our mutual aid or state police had any idea where to go.
Yep.
So I had one running book, one old school running book in my car, and I handed that to somebody. And I'm like, well, that was a bad move. So we actually ended up getting somebody to go to the local, grocery store, a convenience store. And I says, here, go get as many maps that you can off the shelf. So he came back, one of my volunteers came back with like eight maps. So then I started handing those out, but we're highlighting and using markers to put together landmarks on those maps. Because like I said, some of the street signs were gone. Some of the things that we would use as the normal responders, you know, go down here to X house and turn right. Well, that house wasn't there any longer, you know, so we were handwriting on these maps. So for somebody listening today who's thinking about this, take your running book and make copies of it and then handwrite specific things in there. But know that those things that you handwrite in there may not be there when you need them. So have a plan A, plan B, and a plan C for your mutual aid company, so they know where to go and how to operate. Because that was something that struck us. And then the other piece, and Steve, I'm sure that you experienced this, and you kind of already alluded to that, being a small, tight-knit community, you probably have many people self-responding that probably shouldn't have responded from your community trying to help. So having those avenues for those that want to help and actually know what tasks you're going to assign them, so you're making sure you're giving them, you know, things that are going to help and not make the incident actually worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that point, the command vehicle got there very quickly from Hamilton County and set up, and that gave us office space and got us computers and radios and cell signal and really helped out a lot. And that, you know, we really used it more as an office than we did, technically a command post, just because we didn't have an office to work out of. But it was great. But, you know, a few hours into it, one of the guys that comes with the command vehicle in a support role says, "Hey, Chief, you know, we have a map printer." I was like, "No, I didn't." And most counties and states have some pretty good GIS, whether it's Esri or some other type of mapping software they use, whether it be for the tax department or the auditor or whomever. And he was able to quickly start firing up a computer and printing off maps of just certain areas of the town. And then we were able to give that to responding companies or crews that were going out to do secondary searches and said, "Hey, you know, just highlight this and write on the map, you know, house is okay, house is destroyed, you know, whatever," and bring those back. And that's how we started tracking a lot of that stuff. And then to your point, also law enforcement was huge. And we had an amazing response from law enforcement. And the one that was kind of surprising to me was our Ohio State Patrol. You know, normally they just handle crashes and speeders, but in Ohio, a lieutenant's a really big deal in the state police, and a captain is a really, really big deal. And within the first hour, we had multiple sergeants, two lieutenants, and a captain. And they weren't there just to help us from a law enforcement standpoint, but they were basically like, "What resources do you need? Because we'll call the governor and get it for you." And you forget sometimes that you're whether you have a highway patrol or state police, but they have that direct connection in the capital city to the governor, right? Because they're a lot of states, they're the ones that are protecting the governor. And having that resource was amazing. So we've got a helicopter, we got a drone team, we got a PIO, a photo unit. So something you don't think about, and I would recommend you do early and often, is they sent their photo unit that usually does crime scenes. And we just sent her out with someone else, and she photographed every damaged vehicle, every damaged building in our town, and gave it to us on a thumb drive. So now when we're dealing with insurance, or we're dealing with the long-term recovery committee, or a resident is maybe fighting over insurance problems, we have a lot of documentation because the town still looks a little rough, but it's also been cleaned up a lot. So, you know, if your insurance company or your insurance adjuster doesn't show up for 5 days and you've already done a lot of cleanup, it's hard to show them, you know, what happened and how the conditions look. So that was a huge help. And they just came, I mean, and offered all those resources. And it was amazing. And on that law enforcement piece also, going back to, you know, not knowing the town and knowing their ways around, we used a lot of the law enforcement for roadblocks. You know, give them a stationary place, whether it's a security detail for a building or an intersection, so they don't have to rove around. And again, we let our police officers handle the radio calls because they know the streets and they know the people and they know how to get around the detours.
You know, Steve, some people are saying, "Well, you know, we have our, you know, we have our smartphones and we have our maps and our AVLs," and
didn't work.
That's great, but they don't work. You know, you have to, you know, wait for the cell phone companies to bring in portable, you know, sites so you can have cell phone service and have Wi-Fi, all the stuff that we depend on every day. And a lot of our plans are built on aren't going to be there and aren't going to work. So I appreciate you mentioning that stuff. And just lastly for me, because I do have to tap out, I have to get back to a conference and I'm being kicked out of the room that I already have a late checkout for. Frank just mentioned up front that I was in a conference, just wanted to give a quick update. So I've had the honor to attend the North American Fire Training Directors Conference the last couple of days in Zermatt, Utah. And I see Chief Fulton's on the plane. He's leaving now. I'm going to be leaving shortly today. And all that I would tell you is this is an amazing group of state fire directors who this small group is responsible for overseeing training cool stat I heard yesterday, to 1 million students per year, or over 1 million students per year, and it's a very small group. I would encourage anybody listening today, if you don't know your state fire training director, to go meet with him or her, because there is a lot of valued information that's being shared and being learned that we need to share with our constituents. So if you're not familiar with your state training director, please reach out to him or her, because they're a great resource of information. And I thank Frank for handling this one. I know in the pre-show, he said, I've been missing, I've been MIA. And, you know, I tapped out early today to escape presenting Bobby yesterday. I was afraid to present in front of him, so I presented today. But I think I just want to give Chief Hall an opportunity to speak before they cut off his phone and he gets yelled at for not being on airplane mode. So thanks, everybody. And Steve, thank you for sharing your story.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
I apologize, guys. Once again, I find myself on an airplane. So it was a great get together with the. Sorry, I had help with the bag. The North American training people, they really great group of people. And just to echo what PJ said, please get with your state training director and see what they're having a pipeline for you. We covered everything from lithium ion batteries to mental health to everything in between. And it was a great meeting for people. They will be convening again at FDIC. So if you want to talk with them there, they'll be at FDIC for 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday meeting. And it should be a phenomenal meeting. So if you want to talk with them in person, you'll be able to do that at that location. So kind of a famous location. I'm going to register. the conference is an opportunity to do so. But I want to thank Steve for sharing with us. And Mike Tyson and Aristotle are often mentioned in the same breath. So I kind of appreciated the philosophical toss out there to Iron Mike. Fascinating guy, right? Really fascinating guy. So anyway, really great conversation about plans and preparation. You know, I think the real testament to it, though, is that you had a community that had invested in good training, good people. Obviously, the city manager like me, a good fire chief, it just makes everything go so much smoother when we have good communications and good relationships. So on behalf of American Airlines and myself, I'll be tapping out and getting settled in here on my flight back home. And I will be up in the Emmitsburg for the Memorial, and I guess together there, and then down in Jersey. So I hope to see some of you there. And then I'll be out in Ohio, Steve, in your neck of the woods. I'm coming in for the EMS Chiefs Conference next month sometime. So I hope I get to see you there. It should be a good get-together. So thank you so much, Steve, for sitting in with all this. And thank you, everybody, for joining with us today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby. Have a safe flight. Steve, you're in an interesting position being in charge of the whole town. How did that come to play with working with Public Works and your other agencies that are all responsible to report to you?
So I think being the former fire chief, I had a little bit of an advantage. So all the department heads and I had worked together for years in a different capacity. Now, technically, I was their boss, but I don't think they really see me as their boss, more of a peer. But I have hired all the department heads here at Goshen. So everybody that's working here in a top level position, I hired over the last couple of years. But to your point, like talking about Public Works, I think we underestimate, I definitely did, how much of a Public Works event this really is. And that was new to me as a struggling administrator, former fire chief. I understand the public safety aspect and the NIMS and all that sort of stuff. I had no idea what resources were available from the public work side or how important that was going to become. So woody debris is not a term I have spent a lot of time in my career worrying about. And by day two, woody debris was the number one priority. After about 36 hours, it stopped being a fire, police, and EMS emergency, and it really became a public works emergency. So it was coordination with the electric company on getting power back to people, which had to do with getting trees out of the way and cleaned up and getting the roads back open. But we had the joke was we had a mountain built. So we started calling public works departments, neighboring public works department for mutual aid. Kind of interesting to Goshen. We have five public works directors of other communities that live in our community. All five responded and basically went to our public works director and said, what do you need? And I've already got a backhoe coming. I've already got dump trucks coming. I've already got chainsaws coming. And so that was a huge resource that I sort of underestimated or never really experienced before. But we continued to operate our command structure for 2 months. Police, fire, and EMS was the first 2 days. The next 2 months was public works. And our public works director went from being a guy that you called when somebody had a complaint about a ditch or a pothole to the most important person in Goshen Township. We had hundreds of mutual aid road department crews come, and we had to set up a system on how to coordinate them, how to feed them, and all that. So we really moved into that recovery phase. It was all public works and equipment and also the legalities of, can you go on somebody's private property to clean up woody debris, and who's liable if you do that? And so some of those decisions we made, one of them was that if you put it to the curb, we would take it, but we're not going to go onto somebody's property, private property, to cut down trees or do. And that's really cool if you have a house that's 50 feet off the right of way, but if you have a house that's 1,000 feet off the right of way, it causes a challenge. So another unmet need that came up 3-4 days into the incident was all these people that live in the more rural part of our community that didn't have the resources or the equipment to get rid of this woody debris or move it to the right away. And I also learned, besides all the public works mutual aid, there's a lot of volunteer organizations that do this type of stuff. They're essentially storm chasers that work for churches and other organizations, nonprofits. And they showed up in force and brought their own cooking supplies and tents and equipment. And the next thing you know, they're out there cutting tree, going on people's property, and they would just take 10, 12 volunteers and they would work on that property until everything was cleared and pulled to the right of way. And then the public works trucks would come through and clean everything up. We took it to one site, dumped it, shredded it, and we ended up with a mountain of essentially mulch, which is still here today. So we're trying to get rid of it one truckload at a time. But the last number I heard is we had over 50,000 dump truck loads of woody debris removed from the right of way.
Public Works is indispensable, especially in times of an emergency. And my respect for Public Works really came for when I was a kid living in a firehouse in Montgomery County, Maryland. We responded to the Mark Amtrak train crash right outside of DC in Silver Spring. And the incident commander had the wherewithal right from the beginning, early in the incident, he asked Public Works to create themselves a road through the woods and graveled it. I mean, it was like a 5-foot path. And then he had them put up a snow fence to keep out bystanders. We had two trains derailed. And it was amazing how just independently and how quick they worked. And, you know, the path through the woods turned out to be invaluable because the incident wasn't just an hour incident. It was forever. How did you manage working with the utility companies, the power companies, the gas companies? Did you get them in your command post early? Did you team a firefighter up with them? Because no, regardless of what community you're in, we're all dealing with, you know, water, gas, electric.
Yeah, so in Southwest Ohio, our gas and electric is the same company. It's Duke Energy, and they're all over the country, based out of, I believe, North Carolina. So they're familiar with hurricanes and tornadoes. But they have a local government liaison who I had met before, Chad Schaefer, and Chad showed up maybe within the hour of the event and with his laptop and his phone, and he was in our command post for the first week, all day, all evening, into the wee hours, and he was coordinating all the crews for the power company. But he was sitting next to our fire chief and our police chief doing it. And that went on for a week, and amazing, amazing coordination and how quickly they literally had to rebuild the grid in Goshen. There was nothing left. So they started, they let us know, hey, we're bringing in tractor trailers and we're going to stage 500 telephone poles. Where can we drop them? So we had to find a place for them to drop 500 telephone poles. And then they started picking off the pile to start setting new poles. And you just don't think about that aspect of how much coordination and work goes into. You got to get rid of the stuff that fell and get it off the right away and pick it up. But you also have to, they're digging holes and setting poles. And then once they set poles, they're setting transformers and the cross members. And then eventually they're starting to string wire. And then eventually they start powering things back on. And whenever you start powering things back on, other little problems pop up. We were worried, obviously, about the potential for fire. Didn't have any, amazingly. We didn't have anybody electrocuted either. With all the people that were driving over power lines the first day, I'm surprised that nobody got zapped. But yes, the power company was amazing. And obviously, they were getting a lot of flack from the public about how long it was taking, but literally they had to rebuild it like it was a new town. And they were right there with us the whole way. And I would add, just to give a plug to Duke Energy, is they have a Duke Energy Foundation, which is a organization that gives grants to local nonprofits. And they not only came in and fixed our grid, but they were one of the major donors to our local recovery committee that is now helping homeowners that were under or uninsured with losses financially. And they were one of the largest donors to that as well, and gave a donation to the fire department and the police department and several food banks.
Chief, if you want, we'll have Peter put up a link to that if you send it to him after the show. Sure. For the show, we'd love to give credit where credit's due. And absolutely. Something that you said that was pretty interesting in there is that, most people think if you have a tornado or you have a weather event, something catastrophic, that the federal government comes in and everything's okay and insurance and loans, but it also has to do with the size and per capita. Can you explain that? Because that was actually even news to me. I was looking at that and I was like, that's interesting, because I don't think most people understand that people can be underinsured.
Yeah, so we started hearing immediately, where's FEMA? And although our event was really big to us, it wasn't a really big event to the state of Ohio when you look at the size of Ohio and the population of Ohio or the United States of America. And I didn't know it really till this event, but the deployment of resources at the state level or the federal level obviously lay with the governor and the president, but there's also parameters. And part of those parameters of what programs get opened up, what relief is made available, is based on dollar loss and the area impacted, but also, and most importantly, uninsured dollar loss. So if you have a town, let's say, of 500 homes, and all 500 homes are insured, and all 500 are destroyed, the FEMA and the local state government's not coming, because that's what insurance is for. So we had to very quickly in the first couple of days start tracking and deploy volunteers to go door to door. And it was a difficult task because these people just got hit by a tornado. They're dealing with a lot of stress in their lives. Many of them now technically homeless. And all of a sudden, the guy with the clipboard is asking them, do you have insurance? How much is your insurance? How much is your deductible? All these personal questions. And people don't like telling that sort of stuff to their neighbors, let alone the government. So we had to work real hard to explain to people that we had to hit a certain threshold financially to open up some of those funding opportunities for our residents, funding opportunities for the township, reimbursement, et cetera. So in Ohio, to open up some of those programs at the state level, we had a certain threshold to meet. And in our situation, we met the dollar amount, but we didn't meet the number of occupied structures destroyed that were uninsured. Again, if the house was destroyed and it had insurance, it doesn't count for your list. So that was a learning point for us. And we spent a lot of time trying to gather that information to hit that goal to open up some of those programs. We did meet that threshold for some state programs, but not all. But we did not come anywhere close for a FEMA declaration. because FEMA bases their declaration off of the per capita of the state. And again, the Goshen tornado was relatively small compared to the state.
Now, you mentioned that you had volunteers come in and also the role churches played, you know, in sheltering people and taking care of people. How did that fold into your command post and how did you coordinate that?
So luckily, our emergency management agency at the county, we have some full, they have some full-time staff. And, you know, we don't have a tornado every year, as I mentioned before. You know, we get some pretty significant storm events. But we've had enough floods and enough tornadoes that they're pretty well versed in how this works. And they took that over for us and were phenomenal. So our county EMA took over the volunteer coordination piece, set up a site, completely different location, and coordinated, you know, basically put it out on social media and the news media that if you want to volunteer or you're with an organization that wants to volunteer, here's the number to call to register. Here's the email you can send an email to. And this is where you go, you know, this is the only place that you go. And then they vetted them, made sure they were, you know, with an organization or had credentials and whatnot. But you do have the people that just show up in a pickup truck and a chainsaw and want to help. But they were really good at trying to find tasks for them or partnering them with a group. So if there was a group from a church that one of the churches has a group called the Masters of Disaster. And that's what they do. They go out and help in disasters, whether it's a flood or a hurricane or a tornado. That's what they do. So they would, let's say that group had five people. They might take two volunteers that just showed up, hey, I want to help, and partnered them and put them into that group. And then they went out together and worked. But we were very blessed that we didn't have to worry about that. Our EMA took care of that and that process. So we're over 2 months post-tornado and it's still going on every day. So we still have volunteer groups every day of the week in Goshen doing tree removal, cutting up, helping homeowners, doing minor repairs.
As the township administrator, your paperwork probably going on for the next 2 years.
So day five, I told my staff the worst is yet to come. And they kind of looked at me funny and I said, it's the paperwork. It's the documentation. And especially when you don't have a computer, you better have pens and paper. Doesn't show up very well on here, but
Chief, we're getting to the witching hour. And one thing that I want to bring up is, you know, you're an individual who's always moving on to the next endeavor. So fire chief, town administrator, township administrator, what else is new with yourself and your colleagues? Because I hear you have a new adventure you're starting.
So, I've worked on a bunch of different things. I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but
I heard that you were starting a company, a consulting company.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, back to the group of guys that, I worked with. So in the mid to late 90s, I worked at the Mason Deerfield Joint Fire District, and somebody most of our viewers will know was the fire chief there. That was Billy Goldfeder. And Billy was pretty good at attracting talent. And there was a whole bunch of us that worked under Billy's command, and all of them have gone on to be great things, lieutenants, captains. I mean, you go to any training event in Southwest Ohio and it's a whole bunch of Mason Deerfield reunion people. And so four of us kept helping each other out on different projects as fire chiefs. Hey, I need help with a strategic plan. Would you come in and be a facilitator? Hey, I need help with a lieutenant promotional process. And we kept doing, you know, helping each other out, but we realized one day we were doing a lot of work for free. And there might be people out there that would be willing to hire us to do this. And all of us are now at a point where we're, you know, five bugle chiefs, if you will, you know, have some credentials under our belt, have some pretty good experience. We're all at that 25, 30 year mark in our careers. So we started a company called S3D, Public Safety Consulting. We're really just focused on Southwest Ohio, the area where we live. We're not looking to be big. We're not looking to be international or compete with the big boys, but we're a small consulting firm that mostly helps out with things like strategic planning and officer promotional processes and things like that. We don't do any advertising. We don't have a website, so I can't direct you to the website, but my email is steve p@s3dpublicsafety.com.
Chief, well, put that in the email to Peter with that link to the foundation, and we'll put both of those things up. If anybody wants to get in contact with Steve and his group, please reach out to him. I want to thank the chief and the township administrator for coming on our hangout today. As I said, he's always somebody I've held in very high esteem, and it's so nice that when you ask Steve, you ask the chief for something, he follows through. So, you know, they always say, if you want something done, ask somebody who's busy, and you really fall into that, to that niche. So we appreciate you at Fire Engineering, and thanks so much for coming on today. Peter does a great job behind the scenes. And Peter, if you could take us off, and everybody have a great day.